Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast.
We are one church that meets in various locations across Greater Manchester.
For more information about who we are or where we meet,
please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
I don't know how familiar you guys are with Nehemiah as a book. I don't know if you've heard loads of preachers on it before or none at all. But if you're anything like me, you're probably never taught anything about it in your church youth group. And that's where all my biblical knowledge comes from. So it's a bit of a blind spot for me. But I have now read it. And yeah, I'm really excited to be... you'll be glad to know. And yeah, I'm really excited to be preaching on it because I think it's got loads of quite practical insight into how we should be going about living our lives as followers of God. In quite a kind of day-to-day way. So before we get into the actual passage, I want to start by telling you guys a story about my church back home on the South Coast. So for most of my childhood, my church met in a gym of a local school, and it wasn't ideal. It smelt of sweat most of the time. We couldn't use it midweek, and I kept smashing all the overhead lights with footballs. I did it twice, so we really weren't on good terms with the school. And so our church felt that it was God's will for us to buy a building for ourselves. And one building in particular that we looked at when I was about 10 years old was on this huge industrial site. And it was great, but it meant that we had to get our local council's approval to change the use of the building from an industrial site to a church. And so I remember we had a meeting with a bunch of people from our church all packed into a small room, pitching to some councillors about why this building should become a church. And I was dragged along because I was promised a Mackey's. And I remember after we pitched why we should change the use of this building, one by one, all the councillors rejected our plans. And what made it most painful was that one of the councillors actually used to attend our church. So we were kind of banking on him to pass it, even if no one else did. But he also rejected our plans to make the space into a church. But ultimately, when I was about 16, after a few more failed attempts and after a few more buildings fell through, we did manage to get a building for ourselves, as God had promised us. But obviously, along the way, we came across quite a lot of opposition and pushback that was pretty disheartening. And whatever your goals in life are, you know, whether you're a Christian or not, it's quite certain that somewhere along the line, you're going to come across pushback and speed bumps that will try and stop you on whatever path you're on. And how we respond in these moments is actually quite make or break in terms of whether we keep going or not, and whether these goals are achieved. But it can be really hard to know how we should actually respond, especially if you've experienced a lot of failure and it has left you disheartened like we were. And so in chapter 4 of Nehemiah, we see Nehemiah, who is the central figure of the book, he's in a similar situation. He's facing pushback from people who are against his calling from God to rebuild the walls around Jerusalem. But how he acts, I think, can give us some really great biblical insight into how we should also act in situations like these as followers of God. So just to refresh you guys on what's happened in Nehemiah so far, God had allowed the ancient Israelites to be exiled from their homeland by the Babylonians because they had been sinful, because the Israelites had been sinful. But he promised that one day they would return to their homeland. And so after the Babylonians were defeated by the Persian Empire, a line of Persian kings began to allow some of these people to return to their homeland so that they could reestablish themselves there. And so Nehemiah, he was sent back to Jerusalem because he had been called by God to rebuild the city's broken walls. But not everyone was happy about this. And it says in chapter 2 of Nehemiah that when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant heard this, it displeased them greatly that someone had come to seek the welfare of the people of Israel. So from the very beginning of Nehemiah's calling to build the walls around Jerusalem, he started to face some serious pushback from people that didn't share God's vision for the people of Judah. And so if we read chapter 4 of Nehemiah, we can see how this opposition developed. So it should come up on the screen if you want to go to your Bibles as well. So now when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he was angry and was greatly enraged, and he jeered at the Jews. And he said in the presence of his brothers and of the Samaritan army, "What are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it for themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish it up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubble, burnt as they are? Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him, and he said, yes, what they are building, if a fox goes up it, he will break down their wall of stone. Hear us, our God, for we are despised. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them up as a plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt, and let not their sin be blotted out from your sight, for they have provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders. So as we can see from this passage, Sanballat and Tobiah were against Nehemiah rebuilding these walls around Jerusalem. And it's clearly not a very noble opposition that they're putting up. The chapter says they were acting from a place of anger, and they were obviously being quite petty in the way that they were insulting Nehemiah, which is quite an obvious indication that they didn't have some just cause that they're defending. They weren't being righteous in this. They just didn't want to see God's people succeed because it went against their own selfish motives, whatever they were. But they still had to be taken seriously by Nehemiah. They weren't just two random men who were having a go at him. They were local governors of some of the nations that were surrounding Judah. And it even says that Sanballat made his insults in the presence of the Samaritan army, which would have made his opposition that much more threatening. And what probably made it worse for Nehemiah was that Tobiah was actually of Jewish descent. He was the cousin of Eliashib, who was a priest at the time. And just like what happened when my church was trying to get this building, Nehemiah received opposition not only from outsiders, but from who he thought were his own people as well. And I'm sure lots of you can relate to this, you know, receiving opposition and butting heads with people inside the church as well as outside. So Nehemiah and the people of Jerusalem, they couldn't just block their ears and get on with what they were doing. They had to respond to this somehow. So how does Nehemiah respond? Well, we can read in verse 4 of the chapter, he straight away instantly starts praying to God. He says, hear us, our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as a plunder in the land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders. This is obviously not a love your enemies moment. You know, it's not very turn the other cheek. But it's an amazing model of how we should also respond straight away to any opposition that we face. My dad, he's probably the most hardworking guy I know. And he's always been a really great example to me of what a Christian looks like in secular workplaces. And throughout the years, he's encountered a number of colleagues who he's felt have been working in a very unjust or unkind way and were hindering him and the people around him from doing their jobs. And each time this has happened, we did the same as Nehemiah. We just straight away prayed about it. We sat down as a family and prayed into it and didn't ask for anything specific. We just asked God into the situation. And we're now 3 for 3 for them either getting fired or leaving. Which is funny and it's amazing, but it also shows that prayer does really work. And if we're followers of the one true God like Nehemiah was, who has power over all things, then it only makes sense that it's him that we consult straight away when we encounter situations like these. And not only is he all powerful, he's on our side as well. He's rooting for us. And it says in Romans, if God is for us, who can be against us? And it's true, whatever your opposition is, the good news is that God is bigger than it. And if he works all things together for our good, then he's the one we should turn to and ask for help from. And not just as a last resort either. I can be at fault of this, only bringing my problems before God when I feel that my back's really against the wall and I have no other choice. But to straight away take it and give it into his hands like Nehemiah. And praying is also a really useful first response because it helps us to make sure that we're actually seeking God's will. As we see in this story, well-intentioned people like Nehemiah who are seeking God's will face opposition. And this is unjust, this is bad. But it's also quite clear in life that poorly intentioned people who aren't pursuing God's will are going to face opposition as well for the bad things they're doing. And as they should be called out on these things. But it can be hard to know which one we are in times like this. And if we look back over at some of the church leaders who've found themselves in controversy in recent years, in particular some of those who've created really toxic cultures in their church, I wonder if any of them began to face opposition to this and responded by thinking, wow, I'm just like Nehemiah. this is such an injustice I'm facing. I'm going to double down on my efforts, and that will show everyone. And in fact, it looks like in some of these cases, they might have actually thought this way. So to avoid this, to avoid going headfirst down a path that's actually against God's will, maybe it's a good idea that whenever we begin to face some opposition in life, no matter how unjust we think it is, it's worth just having a self-reflective moment with God before we go and do anything brash and just asking him, am I really on your side here? Am I really pursuing your will in this situation? And even if I am pursuing your will, am I doing it in a Christ-like way? Am I going about this in a humble and gracious way? Or am I being quite destructive in the way that I'm trying to assert God's will? And maybe at this point, you'll find you've got necessary adjustments to do. But thankfully for Nehemiah, this wasn't the case for him. It's clear that God was really on his side. And we see in verse 6, it says, so we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half of its height, for the people worked with all their heart. And this brings me to my next point, which is that in these situations, when we're going up against opposition, we shouldn't over-spiritualize things. We shouldn't just pray. God wants us to act as well. And we can see this in verses 7 to 14, where it says this. But when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the repairs of the walls of Jerusalem were going forward and that the breaches were beginning to be closed, they were angry. And they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause confusion in it. And we prayed to our God and set a guard as protection against them day and night. In Judah, it was said, the strength of those who bears the burdens is failing. There is too much rubble. By ourselves, we will not be able to rebuild the wall. And our enemy said, they will not know or see till we come among them and kill them and stop the work. At that time, the Jews who lived near us came from all directions and said to us 10 times, you must return to us. So in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall, in the open places, I stationed the people by their clans with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, do not be afraid. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. So Sanballat and Tobiah and a few others now, they heard that God's people were getting on with the building process, and so they doubled down on their threat. And even though Nehemiah, he knew where he stood in this conflict, he knew that he had the one true God on his side, some of the builders who were rebuilding the wall, they started to feel threatened, and understandably, because, you know, these were powerful men they were up against, and they had armies at their disposal. But Nehemiah, being a good leader, he doesn't ignore his people's feelings and their fears. And it says, but we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. And he also stationed men around the city to keep guard of the families living there. And, you know, it's important that prayer came first for all the reasons mentioned before. Perhaps if prayer hadn't come first, he'd been tempted to go guns ablazing, overpowering his enemies in quite an ugly and ungodly way. But he then follows his prayer with godly action by posting guards to protect his people. And action is really important because a common thread throughout all the preachers done so far on Nehemiah is what issues in the world really burden your heart. And God doesn't just give us these passions and burdens for us to only pray about them and leave it at that. We have to act as well. You know, as an example, if you feel really burdened by the issue of poverty and respond only by praying but doing nothing about it, I don't think that's actually what God wants. I don't think that that's his model to see change in the world. He wants us to rely on him, but he also wants to use us as vessels to actively see his will being done. And when Sanballat and Tobiah were mocking Nehemiah, they said, will they sacrifice? Which essentially means, are they going to pray the wall up? But Nehemiah proved them wrong, not only by praying, but also by going ahead and building the wall and defending his people in the building process. So I think as Christians, we should be more like Nehemiah and shouldn't have reputations of being passive in issues that we should be leading the way on. And if you need inspiration for this, just look to the ultimate example, which is the death of Jesus on the cross. He saw that the ultimate conflict that humanity faces is that we're fighting a losing battle against our own sinful and corrupt nature. And he took the ultimate action on the cross. And he received mockery just like Nehemiah did, but he prayed and he acted and he saw the victory won for us in this situation. And so maybe it's worth thinking now, is there some necessary action you need to take to see conflict or injustice dealt with in your life or in the world? Or maybe on a more personal level, maybe there's destructive habits and sin in your life that's trying to oppose you in your walk with God. And Nehemiah knew where he and his people were vulnerable. He knew the areas of the wall that were vulnerable to attack, and so he made efforts to defend these areas. Maybe it's worth reflecting on what areas in your life you feel vulnerable and easily compromised by sin. And maybe now's the time for you to, pray into it and receive that forgiveness that Jesus won for us, but also actively fight back against it and take sensible action. And this leads me on to my third point, which is that, spiritually speaking, the fight is real for us. We've got to act and defend our cause and our walk with God, just like Nehemiah. But I think it's really important for Christians that in the midst of this fight, we don't lose sight of the primary calling on our lives, which is to be the people that God is using to build his kingdom on earth. And that's why I love verses 16 to 18 in Nehemiah, which say this. Let me just find them. From that day on, half of my servants worked on construction and half held the spears, shields, bows, and coats of mail. And the leaders stood behind the whole house of Judah who were building on the wall. Those who carried burdens were loaded in such a way that each labored on the work with one hand and held his weapon in the other hand. And each of the builders had his sword strapped to his side when he built. But let me just find where I am. So I think this paints a really amazing picture of how we should also posture ourselves in times where we're facing difficulties in life, in faith, and in our work with God, which is to be doing work with one hand, but holding a weapon in the other. Doing work meaning, growing in intimacy with God, pursuing God's calling in our life, but at the same time holding a weapon to defend yourself against all the things that are trying to stop you on this walk. And I obviously don't mean this in a militant way, especially in the West, where we can practice our faith freely, although it did look militant for Nehemiah, but to kind of defend yourself and fortify yourself spiritually. I think there's a real risk of being so caught up with the calling on our life and the vision that we believe God's given us that we forget to try and sort out some of our own mess and defend ourselves from the mess that's trying to get into our life. I've had an ongoing discussion with someone in church about a particular historical figure who achieved some amazing things and has actually really made the world look more like God's kingdom as a result. But in his personal life, it looks like he was involved in some really messy stuff. And we couldn't help but see this guy in a slightly different light because of this. Maybe he even felt he could justify his behavior because he knew he was making such a great impact in the world. But God doesn't see it this way. We're all held to the same standard, no matter how important we might think we are. And so we've got to always be keeping hold of that sword that's fighting off the enemies and the sin that's trying to take control of our life. But on the flip side of this, we don't want to give all our attention to this fight either. Earlier when Nehemiah rallies his people in case they need to fight, he says, "Remember the Lord who is great and awesome," before he then says, "and fight for your families, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes." And he starts with this call to remember the Lord because he didn't want his people to lose sight of what they were actually fighting for, at risk of them just becoming absorbed by the fighting itself. And I've seen both people I know and also more well-known people in the public eye have a real passion for particular issues and injustices in the world. But they begin to face some opposition for what they're doing, and they've become so consumed by it and have become so resentful and given it so much attention that it becomes their primary focus. And it almost starts to look like their opposition is now what's defining their actions rather than their original vision and calling. And I think this can make us really resentful and bitter people if all our energy is going towards the things that are trying to get in our way and stop us. And if we do this, I also think it can lead to a real standstill in our faith as well. During my teen years, I was very aware of the ways that I felt I was falling short of the glory of God. And this meant for a long time, I didn't feel particularly worthy to call myself explicitly a follower of his. And I would always think, once I fully dealt with my own issues and the opposition that's in my walk with God, that's when I'll start this whole Christian thing. And it was only when I realized that it's only actually Jesus who could deal with my sin and that he accepted me as I was in all my imperfection that I found any freedom and actually saw any change in my life. And that was when I started to try and pursue God's will with one hand, do the building process, seek intimacy with him and pursue his calling on my life, while also fighting off the sin that's trying to come into my life with the other hand. And so if anyone today feels like their own sin is putting up a real front against their walk with God, and they'll only really feel worthy to call themselves a Christian once they've made themselves right, I'm here to tell you that you are accepted as you are and that it's only Jesus that can make you right before the Father. You know, the Bible is very clear that we can't earn our own salvation. But he also loves you too much to leave you in the state you're in. And by the victory he achieved, he can set you free from these things as well. You know, it's a really amazing deal we get. We get forgiveness, but we also get freedom from the things we needed forgiveness for in the first place. And this brings me on to my final point, which is a short one, don't worry, which is that there's only one way to know that whatever opposition we're facing in our lives, the battle is already won for us. And that's by having our identity founded in the person of Jesus. I think we can be so tempted to find our identity in other things like our success, our financial position, your nationality, and loads more. But when the storms of life come, like we've been talking about today, when we come up against opposition, these things aren't sufficient enough to sustain us. And if that's where we find our identity, then we're building our life upon the sand. The only way we can stay secure in the face of all conflict is by being accepted into a family and given identity that's too good for us to possibly deserve and earn by ourselves. And we then get the opportunity to relate our opposition and our hardship to the suffering and opposition that Jesus faced. And that way we can know the battle is already won for us because it's already been won by him. And this is a privilege that even Nehemiah didn't have. He had faith that God would give him success in building the wall, which he did, but he couldn't see the bigger picture, which Jesus completed, and that we now have the privilege to see.
Thanks for listening.
To explore this sermon or learn more about our church, please navigate to the links provided in this podcast description.
From there, you can connect with us on social media, and you're welcome to check out the music links featured in this episode from our very own musicians.
You can also discover current events and information about where we meet on Sundays and various groups or community projects that you can join in with.
If you're interested in knowing more about us or wish to join us for one of our meetings, please reach out.
Simply drop us an email at hello@ccm.org.uk.
We look forward to connecting with you.